Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Oh, yo, we are back. We are back. Tony, are you there?
Yes, I am. It's a new season.
Season one, episode one. We're kind of rebooting IT Babble Podcast, so the jingle might change, and you know, so anyway.
Yeah, we decided to take a break and retool, and we have some new focuses let's just call it this semester, because we deal with a lot of schools.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I'm hoping to reach a wider audience. There are people out there, I've found, Patrick, that think, and this, and I know you're thinking, is this just an opening joke? No, because my opening joke is about Omar, and I'll get into that in a minute. Who think that in an educational environment with like 1,000+ children, hundreds of staff, and 3,000 to 4,000 active parents, and then maybe 8,000 to 10,000 active alumni, that there's nothing the IT department does. That it's just like you just go in and use the internet and print and go home. So I'm hoping to reach a wider audience this time, so they understand that we do a lot of like really cool, complicated stuff.
That's all we do. I have a switch in my office that turns on and off the internet. It's right next to my light switch. That's all I do.
Yeah, on, off, internet. And I even had a guy, like an engineer came over kind of recently. We did this massive upgrade, and this is another reason that we have not been very active this last kind of in the fall, because I've been doing a massive upgrade at my job, and it's been very taxing. But he came in from the telecom, and he was like, "Yeah," he's like, "it's just going to take you guys some time because you're one of our most complicated customers. You have some of the most complicated configurations running, okay? And this is a huge telecom."
Wow.
So just throwing it out there, we do a lot of cool stuff, and people need to pay attention.
That's a guess.
Or not. I there's a lot to listen to. We're probably not the best.
That's okay. You know, when it comes to education podcasts, I think they're usually pretty dry. You know.
We're in the top 1,000 at least.
I think so. Easy. I think that's pretty easy.
Easy. Yeah. So yep. So we're back. And yeah. And Patrick, over Christmas break, I want you to know that I spent the entire time trying to make an AI chatbot based around Omar.
Oh, what? What?
And when I was done and I asked it to do something, it said that it couldn't because it had childcare duties at home and I needed to ask its wife. So that was a few weeks wasted.
Man, that's a low blow. That's Oh, I wonder if he still subscribes to us. I hope so, because I'm sure he'll laugh.
He listens. He listens. All right.
Well,
so our topic today, our main focus
main
today
topic, yeah,
is the rage, all the rage.
Oh my gosh.
Chat GPT, GTP. Oh yeah, I think it's GPT, but
GPT.
Can keep it straight.
Yeah.
And it just kind of exploded in my like LinkedIn feed, and everybody's just going crazy. And then like a couple of emails run around at work, and I'm like, okay, I need to actually pay attention. And I talked to my brother. He's got a job, he's got a government contract, and they're talking about it at his work. So I debriefed him and then started doing some experiments, and it's kind of ongoing. I've been recording everything and documenting it. So if people call me out, then at least I'll have, you know, some proof, as opposed to just saying, I used the chatbot and it changed my life. So, which is mostly what I'm seeing. So what about you, Patrick? Have you heard about it at your job?
Yeah, I have. And I've tried to get on it, I would say maybe 10 or 11 times, and I've only been able to get onto ChatGPT one time.
Patrick, that's not possible, because there are people claiming that they've used it every day. All day for 30 days, and they've just like they've documented all this stuff, and it's never gone down.
They're at capacity every time. Yeah. And I've tried it at like 11 at night. I've tried it during the day. I've only been able to get on once.
So over the last 5 days, I've been consistently trying to connect. And when it does connect, I have like the, let's say the experiment or the test ready to go. And I run it and try to get through it before it goes offline, freezes, or just gets so slow that it's not very useful.
Well,
and I've been using the desktop client so I can monitor how it connects to its server, how it's using and storing data on my computer, stuff like that.
So before we jump in any further, let's just talk about what ChatGPT is and why people are so excited or scared or confused whatever their emotion is. It is and I could be wrong here. So, but just in mind, it is a natural language artificial intelligence.
Yeah, and it's called a large language model, I think.
Yeah.
Where it's got massive amounts of data that's been poured into it. Now, according to their documentation, this free version that people can play with, and I want to very clearly say that OpenAI, they put this out, they're not saying that this is a viable product yet. They're not saying you should be using it for anything very important. And they're putting it out there with data that stopped at 2021. So any data they put into it, and that's important, any data they put into it stopped at 2021. It doesn't mean it's not growing with data that people are contributing to it now, but they stopped at 2021.
Yeah, that's right. For this sample that they're allowing people to use. So you're not going to find anything about the Russian invasion to Ukraine, for example. That's just too timely for it. It just isn't going to be on there. But what's kind of cool about it is that you could be like, hey, write a book report about Charlie and the Chocolate Factory that's 750 words, and it will do that. It will. It will do that. And the writing samples I've seen, despite accuracy, they sound quite natural for the most part.
Yeah, they do. That's true. They do.
Yeah.
And I've been using what I would call like very simple examples and a repeatable experiment, I think I figured out how the entire like concept works.
Okay.
Like on the back end in terms of how it's putting stuff together. And but Patrick, before we get into so I would say that the plagiarism conversation is what people are debating the most. But before we get into that, I want to talk about kind of the technical nerdy stuff. Because here's the conversation that I got into. Someone's like, are you blocking this service on your network? And I said, yes, I'm blocking it on the network. Now, immediately, why did people think I was blocking it? Because they think I don't want kids to have access to something, whatever. That's not the reason I'm blocking it. I'm blocking it because I currently fill out 4 pages of documents every year for our cybersecurity insurance. And I will not put anything on the network that could remotely create some problem on the network or with our clients that I haven't tested. And if people think that that's crazy, like that I'm overreacting, I'm sorry. But like, if you're in charge of like the technology platform, and you look at a tool and decide you want to test it for a few days, I don't think that makes you paranoid. You could look at it for your own reasons and think you don't need to test it, but like I feel like I need to test it. So I blocked it until I could get a handle on it. And I specifically wanted to get a handle on things like how much data is it using?
Yeah.
Is it encrypting information? Is it storing it somewhere? What ports? Like, let's say we wanted to use it and I noticed it uses a bunch of wonky ports, which it does. I might want to put some rules on our firewall for that. Like there's a lot of reasons to test something. And I've just been a little bit shocked with like some of the like, oh, it's fine attitude. Like, oh, it's gotta be fine. Like, who do you know, Patrick, at the OpenAI project that you go out with and have beers with and are really good friends with?
Nobody.
What?
And
but Patrick, they're not your best friends?
They're not my best friends, apparently. No, I think that's good. And what you're talking about, and we can get a little bit more into this. So you have a service. It could be a service that's running at your school then. Like an app. It's not just the website.
That's right.
Okay, all right.
Because people can install it. So like it's not just the website, the teachers or any staff member who actually wanted to use it. If you download the client, it's a way better experience. Okay. You get more features and it's faster, I think. Yep. And you can copy and paste the content easier. Like it's easier to use. And I'm assuming that when they add more features, the web client is going to be able to utilize your microphone, your camera, all this other stuff. So like the desktop client is going to be the powerhouse. So that's what I'm interested in.
Yep.
For the most part. So I don't want that just downloaded and running, without testing it. So that's what I've been doing.
That's good.
Now, yep. Yesterday, so I've been testing it, and part of the testing, I'm kind of going in reverse. So I'm not covering everything today. So I want to cover the most recent thing, where last night I had a conversation with the bot, and I put this on itbabble.com. And I was asking it how it stores and uses data. Now, I also asked it some interesting questions. First, Patrick, I said, if two users are using a chat AI on the same SSID, so that's the same Wi-Fi, can the AIs communicate with each other about what the users are doing? And it said that it could if it was allowed to.
Oh, okay.
Now, that means that it's not according to itself, but that means that it's an option. Okay, so let's say that you're looking at a commercial version of these products. Well, are the gloves going to come off then? I mean, let's say you and I work at the same place and we're using the AI bot to like help us with our jobs, like it can make spreadsheets. It can do all kinds of math, like whatever. And then those two AIs start sharing information about what we're typing. And then that happens network wide. That doesn't happen with any other systems that I know of that we're using, where the actual service is pushing my results over to you so it can basically enhance itself like internally. So it's not knowledge stored in like some generic server environment. It's like company knowledge kind of is getting passed around by the different AI bots, which is cool, I guess, if you're in the same department working on the same problem, but maybe not so cool if you're working on confidential information. And then the other thing I noticed is that I asked it if it stored data. Now, this is great. And this is all documented, by the way.
Yeah, so I'm looking at it right now. It's sweet.
Okay. So it says it takes the data and pools it, current version, pools the data. So Patrick, when you use it and I use it, all of those conversations are being pooled back into the system and analyzed. It claims it strips away user identity and user information, but it's still taking all of our information and commingling it and pooling it together. And I was thinking about this before I started looking at what was happening with my file system. If I were using this thing for research, and let's say my research is funded by a grant and it's supposed to be confidential, even though my name isn't going to be attached to it, aren't my research results going to be in that pool for other people to access?
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't say that other people can't access it. It just says that my identity is separated from the information. So the information I put into it doesn't get credited back to me. It's just now available to all the AI instances. Okay. So that is something I think anyone should like consider.
So
like it, go ahead.
There is a venture capitalist out there named Jason Calacanis, and he was talking about ChatGPT, and he thinks that it might get sued into oblivion because it's kind of what you're saying. It has all this information, and when you ask it a question, it looks at all this information, analyzes it, and gives you an answer. So you can say like, "What's the best laptop under $1,000?" And it will give you an answer. It'll instead of just giving you lists of websites that answer that question, his thing is, well, it's reading that, it's using that information to make a determination, but it's not referencing any of that. So he feels that it could be open for a lawsuit, that OpenAI could, now I don't. he is very bullish about ChatGPT. He's really in favor of it. He doesn't want it to go away. But this is just something that he thought that they should consider, that this could be something that could bite them down the road.
So I don't think that will happen. I mean, the law could change and it could happen, but I don't think that will happen now. And this is why. So I want to do a little experiment with you, Patrick.
All right. I'm ready for experiments.
I would like you to become the AI. Now, before we started, I asked you to open a Wikipedia page about the one and only David Hasselhoff.
The Hoff, yes.
The Hoff. Okay. I'd like you to read the first. Now, I'm not on Wikipedia now. I know people are like, he's on it. We can't know. We can't see him. Not on it. I'm just on Skype. We're doing a talk. I'm doing this on purpose.
All right.
I would like you to open. You've got to open up. I'd like you to read the first two sentences.
Okay. All right. And okay. Here we go. David Michael Hasselhoff. Parenthesis, born July 17th, 1952, parenthesis, nicknamed, quote, the Hoff, unquote, is an American actor, singer, and television personality. He has a Guinness World Record as the most watched man on TV. Oh, wow. Okay. Those are the first two sentences.
Now, so you gave me that information.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Patrick, what I would like, I did this kind of the wrong way. That's what I wanted you to do. Now, I'm going to be the AI.
Okay.
Ask me a question about David Hasselhoff.
Okay.
Just say a generic question.
All right. okay, here he goes. What are some of David Hasselhoff's most popular TV shows?
David Hasselhoff was on Knight Rider and Baywatch, and both of those shows were syndicated worldwide, and Baywatch became one of the most widely watched shows around the world. Okay.
Okay.
So let's just say all that is true. Where did I get my information from?
Oh.
How do I know that?
Oh, yeah. I guess I don't know.
Because I got my information from reading a bunch of information and from listening to you. So I'm listening to you. I'm processing information that you tell me about David Hasselhoff. I'm listening to other people talk about it. I'm reading Wikipedia, but maybe I read his biography. Maybe I watched Baywatch. Maybe I watched news article, like watch news shows where they talk about how popular Baywatch is. Maybe I ingested all this information from hundreds of sources. So now, Patrick, I am the authoritative source. I am telling you what I know about David Hasselhoff. You have to decide if you believe it or not, but I don't have to cite conversations with you when we're out at a coffee shop or a bar, do I?
No.
Because you're like, okay, well, Tony Hasselhoff, he has lived overseas. He's watched a lot of television overseas. He's probably seen Baywatch in like 8 countries. Everybody talked about it. He knew it was really popular. They covered it in the news.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably an authoritative source on what he saw and heard. So I believe that that's true. This is the issue. I don't think people are getting their heads around. It isn't reading your Wikipedia article and regurgitating it. Yes, it has some Wikipedia information. It also has a bunch of other information. I bet that their project was able to pay for data from private data systems like LexisNexis and other places, things we can't even get on the open internet. I bet they used a lot of the web archive and like archive.org.
Yeah.
I bet all of that plus authoritative information from people who were just asked, hey, here's a topic, write everything you know about it. You're a PhD on this, write everything you know about it. And you know what? You don't have to cite any sources. Just write all the information you have on this topic.
Yeah, and you see this on news all the time, whatever they're talking about. They're like, oh, we're bringing in an expert. And
so if the news can do it, and news experts are often not even experts.
Yeah.
They're just like someone familiar with how aircraft fly, you know?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is this is what you're dealing with. You're dealing with a source that is authoritative because it has information. It's not copying and pasting it. It is formed information from information. So that's why I don't think there will be a lawsuit, because it is the source, and you have to determine if it as a source is viable, if it's accurate.
Okay.
And the reason I'm focused on this data security and privacy part is that on my computer, even though it says it's not storing information, there are files that are being created by date and time and growing in size based on how much conversation I have with it.
Oh, so it's keeping data files on your machine.
Exactly. So if it's storing information, even if it's encrypted, if a person, or let's just say a rogue actor or a rogue AI or a piece of software or whatever, could in fact get inside that transmission chain. Mm-hmm. Okay. So online it's encrypted. So it's supposed to be encrypted from point to point. So you can't get in the middle of it and inject information. But if we have files sitting on the computer and those files store the historical record of the conversation, which I believe is what they're doing, and someone could hack those files, wouldn't they just change the conversation in the past? Like, and wouldn't that information then influence the conversation in the future? You don't have to hack the present. You just have to change the data in the past to change the data in the present.
I get what you're saying. And because it is an authoritative source, the source of record, for example, because it's like, oh my gosh, well, it's got to be, people are just going to be like, oh, it's got to be right. It's got to be correct, at least to a degree.
Yes. Now, this brings me back to this kid that I used to teach a long time ago named Juniette. Now, Juniette was in my robotics class. And then I don't know if you remember this, but if you were in the high school, you had to help kids with their extended essays. And I helped him with his business extended essay. And his teacher, one Mr. Lee, who I'm not going to mention by first name, but you know, mm-hmm. He comes to me and he's like, are you supervising this kid? I'm like, yeah. He's like, have you seen his extended essay yet? I'm like, I haven't seen the final draft. He's like, I want you to check out the references. Juniette, I'm not joking, was writing about business, like the airline business or something.
Okay.
His dad worked for Emirates Airlines, and he listed as a source, my dad. In the sources, it said, my dad, he works for Emirates Airlines. Now, here's our conundrum. That was hilarious, and he could not do that for the IB. The IB wouldn't allow it.
Yeah.
As I think most teachers currently wouldn't allow that without some degree of documentation.
Yep.
Okay, so like an expert witness, for example, that's what Juniette's doing here. What we're saying, though, is if an AI program can be an authoritative source, then Juniette can list his dad as a source. Like, they're the same kind of person. Like, his dad did work for Emirates. He had a professional job there. He knew everything about how they operated. He worked in operations. So had Juniette formally interviewed him and documented it, time and date, etc., I think it would have been acceptable. But let's go back to the AI for a minute.
All right.
In my interview with the AI last night, I asked it if it knew what time it was. It said it did not know what time it was.
Okay.
I asked it a few questions about date and time. Now, this is very deceptive. So first off, it's not saying it doesn't know what time it is. It's saying it's not aware of the time. Like, if you're in a room and I ask you, is the sun out? And you say to me, I'm not allowed to turn around and look out the window.
Yeah.
That's what the AI is doing. So it has to know the date and time because it's creating a timeline of our conversation. The log files inside are stacked by date and time. So it's just not aware of the time. There's no date and time stamp on the conversation. There's no way to verify when the conversation actually happened. This is kind of the security issue I have with the information. If you were to go back in time and manipulate it, go back into its file and manipulate it, then the current conversation would change based on data that it actually didn't agree to. But you would have no way to verify those things, because there is no timestamp for you. So if you wanted to use it as an authoritative source, this system is going to have to produce some type of log so you can at least show that you had the conversation when you had it and have some kind of narrative around the whole concept of having the conversation. So that's why I don't think it's going to be sued, but I also don't think it's a threat for plagiarism, because it's not plagiarizing. Juniette's dad is not plagiarizing by telling him what he knows about airline operations. I'm not plagiarizing when I tell you what I know about David Hasselhoff.
Mm-hmm.
However, Juniette could document what his dad is saying in a formal interview. You could document what you're saying with what we're discussing. But with the AI, we can't really document anything. We could copy and paste the information, Patrick, but what does that mean? Couldn't I copy and paste it and then change it and turn it in?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like this is why I think there's the bigger risk we have with this stuff is data manipulation and data being shared that's not supposed to be shared. I think the plagiarism risk is very surface, because any type of intellectual approach to verifying where information comes from would just tear it apart. Like, you know, I there are some examples. Like, I think, like, if I asked you to write about your feelings that you had on Monday, I couldn't prove if that was you or the AI unless I knew you really well.
Yeah. Yep.
But Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, this is a good example. And I was just talking to somebody about this. Literary essays. So literary essays don't have the same level of citation that like a science doc paper would.
Mm-hmm.
So, but literary essays are connected to books. Those books have versions. They have page numbers. So like the AI could give you whatever, but then after you're done, in order to turn it in, aren't you going to have to go back and cite where you got the information from in the book?
Yeah. 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 At a certain level. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. At a certain level. Right. So like just requiring basic citations, and sure, you could jump through hoops and like find an online ebook that matches your exact book and start searching for the things that AI said, but you have to be really careful, because if you didn't read the book, how are you going to do that easily? My theory here is it would take you longer to do that than to just read the book and write the essay.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know who Ben Thompson is? Do you know who he's a tech journalist, kind of a thing. He writes a blog called Stratechery. I don't know why it's called Stratechery, but that's what it is. And he wrote about ChatGPT, and he starts off with, he asked ChatGPT, hold on here. Where is it? I got the article open here. Did Thomas Hobbes believe in separation of powers? And ChatGPT says, yes, Thomas Hobbes believed in the concept of separation. It's three paragraphs, and it's very confident, and it sounds really good, right? And it references his book Leviathan, which I've never read, but the problem is that is not what Thomas Hobbes believed in. He was, so it, even though it sounds great, like you said, if you don't know Thomas Hobbes and his thinking and his philosophy, you are like, oh wow, this is, you're going to turn that in. It's going to be completely wrong. Like the teacher's going to know immediately.
Right. And even if it's, and I've got two more examples, about content that I think people can relate to, because some of the stuff I've been working on, I've been doing a whole experiment with Zork, which I'm going to document later. I have a theory that any human being that would develop an AI loves the game Zork and would have included a lot of information about it in their initial phase of development. And I can confirm that, but I've been working with like what I would call repeatable content to see if I can get the same results, making certain changes to my environment. What I'm trying to say is I want to know if the AI knows where I'm at, what kind of device I'm on, even though it says it doesn't. If I make certain changes to my client environment, do my results change? Okay. So I've been working on this.
Okay.
But the problem is when you design any kind of experiment, you bias yourself. So you're looking for a natural experiment, and I had one come up that was amazing, Patrick. I mean, this was like, so I'm talking to my brother. My brother's like, yeah, me and my buddy were playing with the AI, and my buddy has a dog, and my buddy's dog has some problems. So his buddy's dog is named, the dog's name's Corky.
All right.
The dog is black, and the dog has a tendency to do very unsafe things. So his brother believes the dog is suicidal. My brother's friend believes that his dog Corky is suicidal. So they asked the AI to write a poem and a story about a black dog named Corky who was suicidal. All right. So the AI does it, but the outcome of the story is positive. So it wasn't negative. So there's already some manipulation there, right?
Like
there's,
yeah.
But this was days ago. My brother's telling me this story. So last night, my final experiment was I confirmed the parameters of the conversation with my brother, and I plugged them in. And I got the result of the poem and the story the AI gave me, and I sent it to my brother, and he said, this is exactly the same.
Oh.
So.
Interesting.
Now, I'm not saying that the AI knows I know my brother or anything. What I'm saying is that there's not going to be that many people on the planet asking this AI these specific parameters.
Yeah. Yep.
So if you're designing any kind of assignment or project and it is specific to your class, specific to your content, and revolves around essential questions, which is something no one likes to talk about because of Atlas Rubicon, it is very unlikely that students can use products like this and give you very unique results.
Mm-hmm.
The results will be slightly unique, which I've found with my Zork experiment, but not unique enough for you not to see that they're all coming from the same place.
Yep. Yep.
Now, you could run that through a plagiarism checker. It's not going to come
up. It's not going to. Yeah, won't catch it.
Because it's not plagiarism. This software, this AI environment, is ingesting the information, interpreting it, and giving you its own interpretation in writing.
Mm-hmm.
That's not plagiarism. It's not copying and pasting. But the story it kicked out was so similar because the parameters were so weird and similar. And it didn't say, I had a story like this earlier this week. It didn't do anything like that. But it did give me this like very similar
yeah.
results.
Yeah. If you have 100 students writing about a particular, maybe a novel, like To Kill a Mockingbird or something, and say this is a junior level high school class, you're not just going to say, write a synopsis of the book. You're going to ask them questions, about certain social issues that were happening at the time. And very pointed, you're going to narrow what they're going to be writing about. And if they use ChatGPT, what you're going to get is a lot of the same stuff being turned in. Like it's going to sound very, 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 very similar. And I think you're going to find passages, maybe even whole sentence, maybe even two or three sentences that are like verbatim, word for word. And just reading about it, I've heard the longer that the piece is that it has to write, the more you see repetition of structure, the more you see some, they're correct, but there's just some odd grammar structures.
Right. So, I think that, what was I going to say? I had the thought, Patrick.
Sorry.
And it's the AI. Sorry, the AI is in my head.
Well,
Patrick.
I'll just jump in here while you're thinking about it. I had a teacher, an English teacher, who was, because there's articles out there by The Atlantic that say, here, I'm reading, the college essay is dead. I think they've renamed that article. No, it's still there. I think they've written a couple of articles about this. And she was concerned. She was like, wow, do I have to worry about this? Because, it produces a product that actually sounds pretty good. And I told her, no, you shouldn't have to worry about it because if it's a lengthy one, it's not going to match their previous writing samples. You're gonna see it's gonna stick out like a sore thumb as if a parent had written it.
Yes.
And she was like, okay.
And Like, okay, if you're a teacher that doesn't ever do in-class writing assignments, like short ones, like we're going to write the first 5 minutes, just so you know what your kids are, like what their level is and how they write. If you're a teacher that doesn't require citations, if you're a teacher that takes papers in and doesn't actually read them and just hands out grades, then yeah, this product is basically going to nullify your class, but your class is already nullified.
Yeah.
You're not doing any work.
You're not doing anything.
I mean that you're not doing anything. So if you're someone who, you know, does the initial beginning of the year writing sample, which I think most people do or have done, like a short thing for people to write, to gauge a level. And you do that kind of frequently, and you also require citations and ask people questions about their paper.
Yeah.
That's really all you have to do. You're going to catch cheating pretty quickly. If a student turns in a well-written document and you ask them questions and they can't articulate the information in it.
Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah. For sure.
Something else that I think really useful. Okay, this is very useful. I'm asking you questions and you are articulating the answers because you're good. You've memorized it. And I say, Patrick, that's an interesting thought. What were you doing when you came up with that thought? Because when I have like good ideas, I generally remember I was in my office. I had just watched this. I just had some coffee. Mm-hmm. Like that's how our brains generally kind of store information. It's not just stored. It's connected to things that we were doing.
That's right. And it's working on it in the background, like all the time, especially if it's an important project or.
So people steal stuff from people all the time. They steal intellectual property all the time. So when they go to mediation, that's one of the questions the lawyer is going to ask them. When you were developing this software, tell us about the inspiration.
Yeah. What was happening in your life at that time?
Tell us about the first 10 failures you had before you got to this version.
Yep.
That's really all you have to do is just literally lift the surface, look under, and you will get to the truth.
Yeah.
It will take no time. And the first time you bust a few students doing this, it'll probably stop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like,
It'll get out. So here was my thought that I lost. It was about computer programming.
Okay. Now, oh yeah, because it can program too. It can.
So I do think there's some potential here, but I want to explain how, again, it's not going to be able to do your computer programming for you in its current iteration. I'll add that in current iteration. Mm-hmm. All right. So first off, of course, I asked it. I was like, okay. And you have to use these, like, you want to prime it. So you say, you know, act as. So I was like, act as an SQL. Sorry, no, I was like, ask as a JavaScript programmer. And it said, okay. I'm like, write a MySQL database connector, output it in JavaScript. And it said, I can't do that because it will require a username and password, which was what I was tricking it to do. But I can show you what it would look like. So it wouldn't generate anything that would require it to store a username and password. Should be a green light on one side and a red flag on the other, because great, you're not doing that. Why aren't you doing that? Because somebody designed you knew that information would go into a pool of information and my username and password for my database would be in there.
Would be in there.
That definitely is part of my problem with the whole design. But okay. So then I went to the next part. I'm like, okay, act as an SQL programmer and write me an SQL statement that does the following. I had to give it the table name, the fields, blah, blah, blah. And it generated a nice copy and pasteable SQL statement after I told it what the parameters were, which requires me to know how to write SQL statements.
Yeah.
Like I have to know that to get it. Now, it's not going to make a typo like I would. I'm not going to have to type it. Here's the cool thing. I could be working on the web page and I could be talking to it and saying, hey, like I'm giving it jobs to do while I'm working on the web page. And then I'm going to paste the text in later. Okay. So like it's writing the code I need later. That's a really cool idea. That's going to save me time. I have to tell it in the language that I need what I need back.
Yeah.
Like I can't just say, create a new database for me and make it work. Like, and so, and there's an example with spreadsheets. Like, it'll make a formatted spreadsheet that you can download or copy paste with columns, and you can put formulas and stuff in, but you have to know, like, take those two columns and run an average formula on them. Mm-hmm. Give me the minimum and the max values. Like, you have to know these things to get the information out of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a tool for, like, getting people to demonstrate their knowledge, like, verbally and through action, I think it's good, but you can't just, it's not like Star Trek where you're just like, computer.
but
create the following output for me.
It is kind of it is the first kind of system where people can talk to it. And that, I think, is, makes it super exciting. Back to the Ben Thompson Stratechery article, he said, and I completely agree with him in this regard, that this is something new and it's exciting, and it is a big step for AI, and it is not going away. This is not a fad. This is just not, ooh, we did this. And then 6 months later, it's gone. It's going to continue to get bigger. And you're going to see other models appear too. But
yeah, and I think it'll be commercialized.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
It's just going to be sitting there free.
No. And here's what he thought, that how institutions, and he doesn't say specifically, so I'm guessing he's talking of colleges, but maybe even high schools too, where you would go to OpenAI and you would say, okay, we want a database about all of American literature. You know, which we've talked about how this is probably stuff that's out there. They could probably build that. And then he says, you give students access to it. And so what the students are going to do is they are going to ask questions to the AI, and it's going to generate responses and maybe even papers. And then they are going to take that information and piece it together. But like you said, they have to know the source material so they know what questions to ask it.
So here's a good example. Like, it's very difficult for most people to access data sources. So I'm working on a project right now where I'm looking at a bunch of demographic data in the state of Mississippi and connecting it to data that we have in our database at work. And I have to go through data sets that are all over these different government department websites, check the data, clean it up before I can use it. If I could go to a chatbot and say, for the state of Mississippi for the years 2010 to 2014, I need the following data.
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it would save a lot of time. It's going to be a lot faster than what I can do. It's going to allow me to build data sets that I can use for analysis. I do have to still check the data. And I do have to know how to pull it out and access it. But I do think it's a very good tool, like, in that regard. But it is a tool. I don't think it's the brain. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think it's the brain.
Yeah.
I think it's still just a tool. It's not, it hasn't given me, when I asked it for some programming stuff, it was very simple, but it didn't give me any counter suggestions. Well, why don't you do it this way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's not efficient. Oh, I'm going to make a note. this is a new test. I'm going to do I'm going to write some inefficient code and see if it will tell me it's inefficient.
Okay.
So those things are, you know, I'm sure they're coming in the future, but like,
yeah,
right now, like my major concern right now is with any free product, they don't really care about how your data is handled. It's just like, just remember that, like, there's no accountability for what happens to the information you give it. And, we need to make sure it doesn't, like, dude, it literally crashed, like, the client last week crashed my virtual machine. So
oof.
The service was down. Okay. So the service is down a lot. I don't care what anyone says, it's down a lot. It's fine, but it's down a lot. Service was down. I stopped it. It wouldn't stop trying to connect, and it, like, crashed my internet, my virtual, on my Windows virtual machine.
Oh my gosh.
And I pulled up the file and it was just like trying to get to its server by going through like all these ports. Like it couldn't reach it here. So it was going boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, this is crazy. Like there's no one programmed this thing to be efficient right now. It's just out there. And, you know, that again, for me, if teachers want to download it or somebody at work wants to download it, so these are things I have to tell them. You have to quit this thing fully. You can't just close it. If it's sitting there idle, it can start trying to connect and then your system is going to lock up. Like, don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are just like, again, functional things you have to know if you're going to support your users.
Yeah. Yeah. And they just got, I know. So some of the founders, some of the people who were backing this, during the research and the building before they got here, you have Microsoft that had donated, who had given them a lot of money. Elon Musk had given them quite a bit of money. It's just the names are really big. And then recently, I believe Microsoft said that they have actually purchased, not OpenAI, but purchased, I think, because they want to put a chat bot. I'm sure they're going to call it Cortana or something like that. They're going to put that in Microsoft Office 365.
Great.
And so you can, from like a Word document, you can access it. I mean, in theory, right?
Be another service to disable.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And you can go and you can ask, you know, questions, you know, and it'll just give you answers. And maybe even you can hit a button and it'll just copy and paste it and format it right into your... I don't know.
You can already do that with Google. I do it actually all the time.
Yeah, Google Docs has a Google search right in it. I don't think a lot of people know that.
And when I'm driving, I use especially on long road trips, I use the Google Voice system all the time. It works really well. It's gotten a lot better.
It has. Yes. Yes.
But Patrick, here's my controversial question for you.
Okay.
If teachers are allowed to work and have subscriptions to Teachers Pay Teachers and Grammarly.
Yeah.
Aren't students allowed to also have chat bots and Grammarly?
Yes. We don't block Grammarly, though the Chrome extension is something to be desired. And we're not blocking.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. It's caused so many problems.
I have it installed, but I actually turn it on and off.
That's good.
I have it on that little puzzle piece that you get in the corner.
Yep.
And I have to disable it all the time.
It eats.
Because it goes crazy.
It goes crazy. It takes up so much of your resources. I don't know how many times we've had persons like, my Chrome keeps crashing. And it's because of that extension.
Have you ever had it constantly tell you that a word is hyphenated and not hyphenated?
No, I've not.
I'll type like classwork and it'll hyphenate it and then I'll hyphenate it and then it'll say classwork needs to have the hyphen removed. So then I'm like, is this Grammarly or is this Grammarly fighting Google? And Google thinks it's one way and Grammarly thinks it's another.
I don't know.
But if it starts fighting over a word, it gets really slow. So I have to turn it off.
Yeah.
But here's my controversial topic here. If I'm a teacher and I use Teachers Pay Teachers and I buy content and use it in my class, and a student goes home and uses, I think Grammarly is better than this chatbot for papers if you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The paid version of Grammarly, which I've used, like, is really pretty sweet. You can paste an outline in and it'll start stitching it together.
That's wild.
It's not automatic. Like, it takes you sentence by sentence, but it gives you these options. And if you just select yes for all the options, Patrick, it will build your paper. Okay. So like it's trying not to do it, but it will do it. So if I'm a teacher and I buy my lessons and tests and stuff from Teachers Pay Teachers and I use them in my class, I'm not plagiarizing, right? Because I paid for it. But I didn't make it. I got it from an authoritative source and I didn't make it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I think that students should have access to something like this. I don't think, because they're just going to find, they're if they don't, they're just going to find ways to get access to it. You know,
I know. I'm just saying, like, if a school wants to block, what I'm saying is, if you're going to block resources like this for students because you're worried about them creating content, then I think you also have to block Teachers Pay Teachers and sites like that for teachers, because they're purchasing content that they're not making and you're paying them to make content.
Very interesting. Like, wow. Wow. That is a hot, that's a hot take, sir. That's a hot take.
It is a hot take. It's a good way to finish it. If you didn't make it to the end, you missed it.
Yeah. And speaking of the end, we just hit the 50-minute mark. Yeah, holy smokes.
Yeah, I could go on for hours, but I'll stop.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's really exciting. I mean, I am genuinely giddy about this, and I think it's kind of important. You know, I did not like IBM Watson. When the story started coming out about how it has to learn, has to be spoon-fed everything, and has to be formatted in a very, very, very specific way. Or because it gets weird or goes nuts.
I think that model is based on the concept, the kind of sci-fi concept of AI, where it starts out in an infantile stage and each individual person has an AI that they interact with and it grows and develops with them until it exceeds them, but they have a relationship with it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, try to kill them. But it's slow. I mean, you know, the results are going to be slow.
And they can't even, they're having difficulty just giving it away. Like they were giving it away to universities, and universities would try it for a year or two and then be like, and get it out of here. This thing is causing more problems than I know. They were giving it to medical schools, and it was like, oh yeah, this patient, you should do this course of action as treatment. And they're like, well, they're allergic to that medication that you just prescribed it. It will kill them. Are you sure you want to do that? And it's like, yeah, yep, that's the best way to cure them. That's the best way to get rid of that ailment they have. So it's, but this, you know, here it is, natural language. You can actually converse with it, like kind of exactly what you did, Tony. And I don't think people have been able to really do that before.
Yeah, and I think that's the best way to test it. You know, in my dialogue, I even say, you know, may I refer to you as, so that we can set up a dialogue. So I'm calling it, I'm like, I would like to refer to you as you. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yep.
And because I'm trying to get answers from it about itself in its own environment. And I think that's the best way to like approach it and test it and really understand how it works. And I mean, I saw limitations immediately. And when I get into the Zork write-up, and I'll put that on IT Babel, we could do that for the next podcast. I think it's really going to kind of bring home the fact that this isn't really anything to worry about, but it's an authoritative source.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to live with that.
Yeah.
And decide. Are we going to accept it or not? And in the meantime, I'm going to try to figure out if I can, you know, break into these these files and manipulate the data to see how bad the security actually is.
Yeah, well, I'm curious about that too. I'm curious about that. Yeah. Can you quote unquote go back in time and change history? So that's very interesting. That's very interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that was a good episode, man. I think that was a good one to come back on.
It was. Whew. And hopefully Omar will listen.
I hope so, because it was a good joke.
Yeah. I think it was a good joke. It was. Especially if you know Omar.
It was really good. It was really good. He'll chuckle. He'll smirk at it for sure. Anyway, IT Babble, I am Patrick.
And I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on episode 2, season 1, coming your way shortly. And so keep on babbling out there.